Hello and welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth, and this week's special guest, Roxy!
Hey!
Hi!
This week we're talking about addiction. I didn't want to make a joke, it's a very serious topic. Also, I couldn't think of one. But first, let's do Spotify update. Look, do you know we were in the charts?
We're in the charts, we're number 50.
Not high enough. Get us to number 100.
Listen harder.
That's how charts work, right? 100 is better.
Yes, like golf.
Should we start the episode, Luke?
Please.
No, we shouldn't, Luke, because we've got a question to ask for everyone who is watching or listening or perhaps even here in the room. If you're watching, get down to the comments. And if you're listening on Spotify, get down to the comments. And if you're listening elsewhere, oh, goodness me, dive into the ocean. Swim as deep as you can. Find an octopus. You'll find one somewhere and ask it to be your friend. And then ask the octopus to send us a letter. They all know how to contact us. We're very close with the octopuses. So the question is, do you have ADHD? And have you ever had a substance abuse issue?
I'm sure I've been addicted to things. I don't think I've ever had a medical addiction. Mm. And also, my name's Luke.
When you say you know you've been addicted to things, but not medical.
Yeah.
Like what?
Oh, I smoked as an angsty teen and I was addicted to that. I've definitely had a social media addiction at some point in my life. I got addicted to a shopping app fairly recently for a bit.
Did you?
Yeah.
All the same thing?
All the same
thing. It all comes under the same thing. Like, we're all just trying to avoid being human.
Entropy.
Absolutely. Makes sense. What about you?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, let's just... I'm not addicted to anything anymore except for making bloody good podcasts. Oh, boy.
Absolute junkie for making bloody good podcasts, are you?
It's been 56 days since my last podcast.
I wish I could have that long off. Honestly, I do. No. But should we get into the episode?
Well, I've got to answer the question first.
Go ahead and answer the question.
What was it?
Well, you answered the first one. Do you have ADHD?
Yes.
And have you had substance abuse issues?
Yes, I have. Quite a few alcohol, stimulants of various kinds, and also other addictions, including like sex and love addiction.
Mm. Wow, you can be addicted to love.
Well, my therapist would say it was actually like an attachment wounding that manifested in a fantasy life and always seeking something in the other. But to me, I do call it like sex and love addiction, and went to like group therapy to try and get over it. It's an interesting one, that.
It is interesting. Addiction is much broader than people think it is generally. You know, if you hear addiction, a lot of people will picture, oh man, I'm on the heroin every night. But like, no, not necessarily, you know. Yeah, I mean, yes also, but not necessarily.
Yes also.
So look, let's get into the episode and we can talk more about that in a sec. So first off, let's just get out of the way. What is ADHD? Does anyone here know? Does anyone know what ADHD is?
I can't remember the diagnostic thing you always heard.
It's a neurodevelopmental condition.
Yes, characterized by problems with executive function and... low
emotional
dopamine.
Emotional dysregulation.
I'm being really bloody annoying, right? No, I'm joking.
Absolutely.
I'm
that's
joking,
number one but symptom. Also, yeah, like, we've all got it.
That's what the first A stands for. It's the only A. I have ADHD. I can say it. So, ADHD, a neurodevelopmental condition or disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, if you want to know the full name. But I'm sure you already know that because we've done a bunch of episodes on it. I do just want to tell you some stats on it, though. It's more commonly diagnosed in boys compared to girls at a sort of, 5-to-1 ratio or 2-to-5-to-1 ratio, as in the ratio is somewhere between 2-to-1 and 5-to-1. And it's about 8-10% of the US population is estimated to have it, somewhere between 6-9% globally. So a fair few people. A lot of people will be saying in the UK that it's being overdiagnosed right now when it is very much underdiagnosed, goodness me. And it's associated with poverty, lower family income and social class. And in adults, it's more frequent in the unemployed and people with disabilities. Makes sense, because ADHD is also a disability. sometimes. would you like to know some statistics about ADHD and addiction?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Well, you're very lucky because I have some sat in front of me right now. So what do you think? If you compare people with ADHD to the boring ones, what's the difference in the rate of substance abuse issues, do you reckon?
3 times.
Wow, that is literally, yes, that's one of the numbers. So anywhere between 2 times to 3 times, I've got loads of different sort of numbers here, quite broad, nothing too specific's been nailed down.
So wait, so that's more likely, like 3 times more likely to struggle with addiction,
yeah,
if you have ADHD?
Oh, fully, yeah. So if we look at adults without ADHD, this is based on the National Comorbidity Survey replication, the links are in the description, okay? It's from like 2006. You can find it. So any substance abuse disorder, adults without ADHD, that's about 5.6%. And adults with ADHD, it's about 15.2%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because it's also people in prison as well, isn't it? People in prison are more likely to have ADHD.
No, it's like a quarter of people in prison have ADHD or neurodivergent. We did that in our prison episode.
Yeah, I don't remember anything. That's insane.
Yeah.
I was probably shocked at the time when you told me last time. I'll be shocked again.
Somewhere between 10 and 30% of adults will have a lifetime occurrence of substance abuse issues. And when it comes to people with ADHD, that jumps up to maybe about 50% perhaps more. Yeah, we don't have exact numbers on a lot of this. I'm pulling from a lot of different studies, a lot of different places. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people with ADHD tend to self-medicate. A lot of people will have substance abuse issues, will, have full-on addictions. There's sort of a difference between those two things. Substance abuse doesn't necessarily mean addiction. You want to think of it as like the most extreme end of it. That would be addiction. And substance sort of use disorders are, it's a much more broad category, yeah?
Out of interest, where are the statistics coming from that it's like up to 50%? Is that people who seek treatment or is that like surveys? Do you know?
I don't know that 50% number. I can't remember where I got that one from. But again, all the links are in the description. I mean, they will be from surveys. Some of these, what they'll do is they'll take in people who have substance use issues. So if they're looking at people with substance use issues, I've seen a study that did that. They saw that about, I think, 40% of the people that they were treating for substance use issues had ADHD, which is insane. If you think about that in terms of sort of 10%, if we're the absolute maximum number we have on that, 10% of the population has ADHD, let's say, right? 40% of people being treated for substance use disorders have ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 times more than the general population.
Yeah, yeah.
That's mad.
I guess what I'm asking is what would qualify as an addiction? Is a shopping addiction an addiction?
Yeah, absolutely.
But then some people wouldn't know they had a shopping addiction they have enough money to fuel it and never seek treatment.
So yeah, well, these ones are generally, if they had enough money to fuel it, then it wouldn't necessarily be negatively impacting them.
Well,
therefore, it wouldn't be addiction.
You can have the same thing but be rich and now you're not addicted to shopping.
Hey, look, when rich people do something, it's cool and trendy. When poor people do it, it's ratchet, okay? That's how everything works. We'll get to the definition of addiction in a sec. But no, I mean, these are substance use issues. So this wouldn't be more broad addictions. Mm-hmm. I'm talking more specifically here about, sort of drugs, alcohol, which is a drug, nicotine, which is a drug, those sorts of things, right? So people being treated for those, that's what we kind of have data on. When it comes to different kinds of addictions, we don't really have as much data on those, but that brings us pretty cleanly to addiction. Does anyone know what that is? Just the definition.
I would guess some characteristics of addiction would be that you have like a compulsion to take or engage in an activity, and that if you stop it, there's some sort of withdrawal period.
Wow. Yeah.
What he said. I agree with that completely.
You're both spot on. Yeah, no, that's
it's
that
not
is,
me. Don't give that me
is,
a
no,
point.
No, we both did it.
High five. In fact, I think Rox gets more.
Stop it. I don't want the prize for trying.
Well, you're having it.
Okay,
Take your prize.
Thanks.
No, but yeah, addiction is not having control over doing, taking, or using something to the point where it could be harmful to you. And yeah, when you stop doing it, you can have withdrawal. So when you don't do the thing anymore, you feel worse. And you continue doing it even if it doesn't feel good to you. Mm. Almost out of habit is not the most correct way of describing it, but maybe an easier way of understanding it. You're doing it even if it doesn't feel good.
Yes.
It's like an Uber habit.
Yeah?
You know, like it's really, really ingrained. And I can think about that relating to so many things, something that's bad for you that you keep doing. Simple things like fantasizing about things.
Yes, didn't we do this about there was
maladaptive daydreaming?
Maladaptive daydreaming,
which is huge for people with ADHD. A lot of them, the hyperactivity has been internalized within their own mind. Mm-hmm. So we're living up here 24/7. And that can sometimes be a really good thing. So for work, for creativity, for out-of-the-box brainstorming. But when it comes to dreaming about the house you want to buy or the partner that you have, we can often place happiness outside
in the future
away. And it's all to do with taking ourselves away from where we are now. And that runs all the way through. Whether that's alcohol that I've had problems with, cocaine, weed, shopping, it's all to do with I just can't tolerate being me in the here and now without something else to take the edge off.
I feel you on that, you know, especially sort of if we're talking about when I was in school, maladaptive daydreaming was very much a thing. Like I was living so much of my life in my head, just not even thinking about the future, just thinking about like an almost alternate present. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, it's not even looking ahead to a positive thing. It's just sort of escape. Yeah, it can be like really tough. And like if we look at the NHS, they talk about, they're very clear that like addiction isn't just, you know, sort of substances, because people will say things like, you know, like, oh, weed isn't addictive. And yeah, it's not chemically addictive. You can still be addicted to weeds.
Yes, you can.
You know, you can absolutely still be addicted to it. It just doesn't have that same sort of chemical addiction process that, say, cocaine or nicotine, especially if you go back and watch our vaping episode, that can have. But yeah, you can be addicted to work. You could be a literal workaholic. The internet, solvents, shopping, lots of different things. And can I just want to quickly, workaholic, chocoholic, that annoys me. It annoys me as a phrase.
Because there's no alcohol.
There's no alcohol, okay? It should be chockic or workic, okay? That's that makes sense.
Doesn't have the same ring.
It doesn't.
Chockic.
Yeah, chockic. Yeah. I'm a chockic.
I'm a massive chockic.
I'm a chockic. I am a chockic. That's one I haven't quit.
It sounds like a slur.
You shock it.
Oh my god, I can't believe you'd say that.
Oh,
wow. No.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this Sci Guys merch.
Yes, please do not tell anybody and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh, wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. We also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely, under no circumstances should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some Sci Guys merch. Some Sci Guys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one.
But yeah, no. Being addicted to something basically means that if you don't have it, you can have withdrawal symptoms or a come down. And it's not necessarily doing something because it feels good. It's doing something because not doing it feels bad as well. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm only saying this to try and get across to people that are watching and listening that like might not have any personal experience with this, you know, what it can be like. Because, you know, this is from the National Institute of Health, which I think we'll all quite enjoy this little quote. When scientists began to study addictive behavior in the 1930s, people with an addiction were thought to be morally flawed and lacking in willpower. Those views shaped society's responses to drug use, treating it as a moral failing rather than a health problem, which led to an emphasis on punishment rather than prevention and treatment. Today, thanks to science, our views and our responses to addiction and the broader spectrum of substance use disorders have changed dramatically. But not dramatically enough. That last bit was me, I think. Not dramatically enough.
No.
Still the war on drugs, right?
Yeah.
And like, have you seen what they're doing? I think it's in Scotland, right? Where they're
trialing like drug rooms, like safe drug taking rooms.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, where you could go to like a nice warm place and they'll like they'll give you clean needles. They won't give you any drugs. Yeah. You bring your drugs, they'll give you like clean needles and whatever, and it's a safe place to do it. And people are mad at that because they clearly don't understand the actual issue. And I think that's something that is prevalent throughout all of this. Especially like, you know, addiction. But addiction and ADHD, I feel like a lot of people just don't get it.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to judge it and see it as personal failing than it is to maybe be kind to somebody. And I think definitely when you look at the older generation, and I don't want to generalize because there's lots of amazing older people. So I'll talk specifically about my own life. I know that my dad has had massive issues with my ADHD and addictions. And actually, when I try and not like react to that as a kid that just wants their dad to like them, I can see in my dad like probably some neurodivergence and definitely some addiction issues. So sometimes I find the people that are like so committed to not understanding you, it's maybe because they haven't ever had the time or the chance to like understand themselves. They've had to make it through.
Yeah, this smacks of sort of when people say, "Buff, you can just choose to be straight." I feel like if you're choosing to be straight, maybe you're not as straight as you think you are. You know what I mean?
I've never made that connection. That's really funny.
Right? Like, seriously. But yeah, no, again, like, I feel like, and not to generalize, but culturally, you know, the reason we've got generations is because there are slight, well, I mean, actually, no, I'm wrong there. No, there aren't actually that broad cultural differences between generations, the way that we divvy them up. But yeah, like obviously, you know, culture changes over time. And you find that like a lot of people, even in sort of our generation, are still sort of, you know, very much just choose not to do the thing. Like, I cannot tell you the number of comments, and I mean, I'm sure you get lots of these comments as well, where people are saying like, well, I don't want to have to pay for your inability to, you know, to decide to work. You're just being lazy. Like, ADHD, just work around your issues like the rest of us. And I'm like, my issue is that I can't do that, you know. You know what I mean? Like, my issue is that I cannot get out of bed. So I don't know what you want me to do when, like, I can't. You know what I mean?
There's still a lot of stigma. 100%. And I think ADHD is laziness is the biggest one.
Yeah.
And 99% of the comments me and Rich get, we run this like ADHD awareness channel, is really positive, and it's people saying, oh, it's me, and just understanding, and there's this lovely community. And then there's the 1% that I've stopped reading now.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Because, you know, it kind of doesn't make you feel great, and it'll just be, she's lazy, she's awful, she's a horrible person, he's in an abusive relationship, she needs to stop making excuses for her horrible behaviour, she needs to get a job. Like, just horrendous. And obviously they're watching a 10-second video, so they don't understand the complexities of like adult life or relationship from that. So I've also put myself out on that, so I fully will take the negative comments too. But it's sometimes just like the meanness. They're really committed to not understanding. And sometimes I do. And I go and look on the profile, and it'll very often be like a slightly older man.
Yeah.
Very often like with kids. And I just think, God, what's happened to you that just seeing somebody being happy, getting a bit of support for their medical condition makes you rage?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot of, like, I've seen a few of these comments as well. And like, I engage with them. I have a problem, and the problem is that I don't engage enough. No,
you're addicted to answering negative comments.
But seriously, like, I'm much better than I was before. Like, I had no control before, but now I'm like, I pick and choose. But what I notice is that, you know, there was one person I was talking to quite a while ago that was basically like, yeah, well, I have the same thing and I just get on with it. And I'm like, I'm sorry, that sucks. You know, you don't have to. Like, you things could be easier and better for you if you didn't have to do that. You agree? So then, you know, come join us. Like, make things easier for yourself and everyone else. And I feel like that kind of person often is someone who is so bitter. It's the same kind of thing as when Heartstopper came out, and there were all of these like sort of gay men in their 30s who were really, really angry at it. Yeah, and like, really? And no, there's plenty of people that loved it, and there were plenty of people that were like, you know, very positive about it. But there were a few a few people I saw here and there that were just really bitter, saying like, well, that I wouldn't have been able to have, like, that's what wasn't what it was like when I was a kid. Mm. I'm like, yeah, no, it wasn't.
And it's better now.
It's better now. Can we be happy for the fact that kids have this show? And like, yes, it's not for you, but like, the fact that someone has this is good.
We want to make it better for the next generation, not force them to go through the same struggle. It's similar to what we were saying before about like the pronoun discussion, like me being 39.
Oh, yeah. Off pod before we started. Yeah.
I could resonate with maybe being a bit bitter that I can see younger people just like owning it and being so okay and being like respected in their group of friends, mm-hmm. obviously. I can totally feel from that point of view, like, ouch, that can hurt.
Yeah.
And you have a choice. Are you going to, I don't know, embody that bitterness and start hating on people? Or are you going to maybe look inward and say, is that because it resonates with me somewhat?
Yeah.
Do I wish I had this when I was younger?
It's interesting, though, because, I mean, I can give example after example. I see so many TERFs that are like, I would have just been a tomboy. It's like, okay. Do you want to, like, would you have been happier, though? Like, with right now, and you're just mad that you couldn't, and you had to sort of train yourself so much to be this one thing that you're now thinking everyone else should have to do it too. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's a really valid point. It's obviously a very like hotly debated topic, and again, try not to generalize.
Mm.
But very often you might see someone in that group, and actually, like, I would often think, oh yeah, you look like one of us. Like, come over.
Yeah.
It's like really nice over here.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of maybe sadness and shame, and you know, if people have had to fight their whole life to be recognised, I can understand.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
There might be bitterness, but like the call is to go, we don't want the next generation to struggle like we do. We want it to be easier.
Yeah. No, I suffered, so you have to too.
Yeah.
I suffered, so you don't have to, you know? That's
beautiful.
That's what it should be. And beautiful. Like, I find that ultimately, if you're feeling negative towards someone, this is what I try and do. If you're feeling negative towards someone or a group of people, think about why you're doing that. What's wrong with you? Not what's wrong with you, but what is... What's wrong with you? No, but like, you know, not don't sort of think, well, what's wrong with them that's making me dislike them? Think, what's going on with me that's making me dislike this group or this person, you know?
Yeah.
And often you'll find that it's some discomfort leading to bigotry. Woo! But yeah, let's get on to ADHD and addiction and sort of the link there. There's no genetic link between the two of them, and addictive disorders are very complex. They're not simple things. It's not quite as easy as this marker means you will be addicted to something. You know what I mean? There's a sort of social, behavioral, emotional, like environmental and genetic factors. And I think that's important to mention as well. There are sort of genetic factors, to my knowledge, at least, that kind of come into play when it comes to addictive behavior.
Agree. It's incredibly complicated and definitely more research is needed. But one thing when talking about addiction that you can't not talk about is trauma.
Oh yeah.
Because mm-hmm. there is a massive link between those two. I didn't realize that actually until my first therapy session, where I went in and I think I was about a year sober, and mm-hmm. I was just doing the kind of awkward introduction with the therapist trying to figure out if she was the one for me. And as I kind of said that I was sober, she went, oh, so did you go through these experiences as a child? I was like, oh, it's witchcraft. How did you know? And now I've learned a lot more about that and how actually, you know, childhood trauma, which could be the big stuff, could be going through sexual abuse or the death of a parent, physical abuse. It can also be emotional. It can be neglect. It can be abandonment. That's the kind of number one indicator that somebody might be more likely to develop an addiction.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, as well, when we talk about ADHD and addiction, I feel like a lot of focus is put on sort of the neurobiological factors. So stuff going on with your brain, right? Because people with ADHD, brains are different, right? They're smaller in some areas. No, I mean, yeah, but like literally, I mean, the actual sort of gray matter that you have, the size of certain areas of your brain, we've found differences in those when comparing people with ADHD to those without. And obviously, yes, the sort of dopamine issue that's going on with ADHD folk, which we've spoken about in episodes on ADHD, if you want to go and check that out. But yeah, I mean, like, people want to look mostly to the sort of brain stuff, but I think it's really important as well to consider the other factors that that come into play, as you're sort of saying, like trauma and whatnot. People with ADHD are at higher risk for a lot of those things as well. And what I was saying earlier, disability and mental illness. I don't think I mentioned that in this episode, but mental illness, unemployment, all of these sorts of things are environmental factors that can increase your chance of, engaging in substance use and then substance abuse, right? So it's not just necessarily as simple as ADHD brains need happy. So happy wherever can, it's more complex than that.
Some days it feels like that.
Right, though, yeah.
You can think of it if you look at some of the kind of classic symptoms, the emotional dysregulation helped by drugs, weed and alcohol, they are depressants. So it calms you down. Mm. That helps the anxiety. If you look at impulsive behaviours.
Yeah.
That's going out on a night out. That's never saying no. That's sure I'll go to the after party. Like all of the basic tenets of ADHD do kind of lead quite nicely into kind of an addictive lifestyle. So it mm-hmm. works simply, but then also you can drop down into the complexity. And just something you said about the environmental factors, I think it's so important. There's this statistic that is really sad, but that I love about ADHD, which is ADHD kids, by the time they're age 10, have received 20,000 more pieces of negative and corrective feedback from their environments. 20,000. It works out, I think, about 5 pieces a day compared to non-ADHD.
Sure, yeah.
So that's the why don't you focus? It's the eye rolling. It's the you're late again. It's the you've got potential. 5 pieces a day. So you grow up in this environment being fed with people basically telling you that you're broken and that you're wrong and you need to fix yourself. Of course, that person is going to have a glass of wine and it's going to feel really, really good because you just don't have to feel that anymore. You can kind of drown out the voices.
No, yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. And I feel like, are you reading my notes? Because I was about to talk about ADHD and stimulants, but more specifically, ADHD and self-medication, because that's basically what you're talking about there. Do you know what I mean? Having a glass of wine because it makes you feel a bit better. Or even, let's say you have caffeine constantly throughout the day because people with ADHD they can medicate with caffeine. Oh, look at that there. Medicate with caffeine, like an obscene amount of caffeine or nicotine via smoking cigarettes. I can't say the actual word that we say in the UK because they keep on getting demonetized for it.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? And vaping. And then other stimulants like cocaine, crystal meth, MDMA, and a bunch of others, right? But we think of those. Right, as being drugs, right?
Yeah.
MDMA, drug. Caffeine, not drug. There was someone I went to school with, I won't name names, but there was someone I went to school with who literally had such a bad caffeine addiction that her doctor said, you cannot have more than two coffees a day. Mm. It will significantly impact your health. Caffeine is a drug. And many people are addicted to it, and it's very normal, and it's not even regulated. Like anyone can buy a coffee from Starbucks and there's no sort of limit on how many coffees you can buy and how much caffeine you can drink. But it is not good for you. Do you know what caffeine is for? It's for killing bugs.
Yeah.
Literally, plants evolved it to I think the things that will eat the plants will either get so jazzed up they'll forget about eating the plant and, go off somewhere else, or they will die. Obviously, that could be the same could be said for sort of capsaicin, spicy peppers. It's not to kill things, but it's to make mammals not want to eat them. We still have those peppers and we still have caffeine. But again, I feel people don't think about the fact that caffeine is literally a drug.
Every time I'm in someone's house and I see some elaborate coffee machine, I just think what if that was a bong? What if you just had a bong on the kitchen counter?
That would be more normal to me. That would genuinely be more normal to me, right? Because
or a wine cellar. It's just a room for all your drugs.
Exactly.
I mean, sometimes it's for investments, but if you have a room dedicated to storing alcohol, or you have apparatus to prepare caffeine, it's not gigantically different to having a bong or having a grinder or having like some kind of
drug preparation machine. And what's so interesting about caffeine, I was making me giggle because you were listing like all those drugs. I'm like, yep. Ticky tick. Been addicted to all of them, Corey. And I've quit loads. I've managed to quit with a lot of help, with recovery rooms, cocaine, weed, amphetamines, alcohol, vaping recently, which was hard to do.
Oh my God,
but
nice.
The only thing I have never been able to quit is caffeine. So when you think about that, like you have managed to stop cocaine but not caffeine. And I tried to, but the physical, I don't know if you've
ever tried to stop. Awful.
Physical headache and yeah. I couldn't see. I managed it for one day and I had to get coffee.
It's insane, right?
Scary.
So, I mean, can I just point out that like the concept of not being a person until you've had your coffee is so normal that like...
I'm not me till I've smoked a bong.
Don't talk to me until I've had several, drinks of booze. No, that wouldn't be okay. But don't talk to me till I've had my coffee is fine. We're all addicted to... I'm not, actually. I cut it out in uni. Yeah, I mean, I'll have, it makes me too anxious, so I have decaf coffees if I'm going to have them. I can have a coffee now and then without it, like, impacting me. And, you know, obviously in, like, sort of fizzy drinks and stuff, I don't have, like, caffeine drinks where the primary thing is caffeine. And that was not terribly easy, and I wasn't even that avid of a coffee drinker. I'd have like three a day in uni whilst studying.
It's hard.
You know? It is rough. And I want to point that out that like, you know, a lot of people with ADHD will self-medicate with a huge amount of caffeine or with vaping.
Makes me giggle because this was quite a long time ago. So when I was at uni, which would have been the early 2000s, no idea that I had ADHD or quite a lot of unprocessed trauma. And I was at uni, and actually it's very common for people with ADHD that uni is the first time life falls apart.
Oh, yeah.
Because you've had systems in place. Mine was my mum when I was younger. And when I moved away from her, like just my room was chaos. I couldn't go to lectures. My attendance was 5%. And I categorise that as just being a bad person. Turns out it was ADHD. But during that time... on a bid to just really, I was very, very unhealthy in many ways, but I was trying to lose weight and I bought these amphetamines from the internet, imported from Russia. Yeah, it was like 2005, it's a different time. So I was taking these, I think they were called ephedrine stimulants. And what would happen was I noticed, oh my God, I can go to lectures. Oh my God, I can do my dissertation by staying up for 2 days straight. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was finding these like highly illegal, unregulated stimulants. And when I took them, it actually was medicating in a really, please do not ever do it, horrible way.
Yeah, yeah.
But it actually worked for me. So I think so many of us have been building our little toolkit of how to make it through.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be amphetamines for everyone. But for a lot of people, it might be alcohol.
Yeah.
Like the rates of kind of alcohol abuse and ADHD, I think you mentioned it before, it's like 5 times more or something like that.
It's really high, yeah.
It's really high. And that is really sad for me because I was an alcoholic all throughout my 20s. And I think when we talk about addiction and alcoholic, like you said earlier, people are like, oh, you're on the heroin. It's like, no, actually, it can be a lot more pervasive than that. I thought I was absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I was like having a few drinks every night. I was partying a few nights a week, cocaine twice a week. Like that was kind of normal in London at that time.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. Like, I certainly wouldn't have thought I was an addict. And I remember once someone saying to me, do you think you're drinking a bit too much? I was like, oh, you are well boring, mate. Like, yeah. Our friendship's over. You don't often know until afterwards. It's only now looking back to me, I couldn't sleep without being drunk or weed or sleeping pills. Like, I was never sober.
Mm.
And it's like, it's that part of it. That's what ADHD can do to you. It can just make your daily existence so intolerable that you have to find up a other toolkits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, that, honestly, our experiences in uni, I think, are very similar, except...
We should talk.
Well, we should, but I think we're doing it now. But no, I shouldn't say the sentence I was about to say.
Go on.
But there were many people that, you know, were using study drugs in uni. And despite...
Sorry, what study drug?
Oh my God, this is what's really frustrating.
Okay.
It was Ritalin, which I'm now on, 76 milligrams a day, baby. And I refused
for ADHD.
For ADHD.
Let me clarify.
Oh, no, sorry. I've been prescribed it. Yeah, no, I've been prescribed Ritalin. But in uni, obviously, I didn't know I had ADHD. And I was basically, like, you know, really struggling. And, you know, people were passing around study drugs here and there. You know, you hear people using them. And I was like, I'm not going to use a study drug because it's a stimulant. And I know that, like, you know, stimulants like that are just dangerous. And I'm not going to do that just to, like, you know, get an essay done one time. I wish I'd done it. I wish, like, in the best way possible, right? Like, I am now prescribed that very specific drug. I'm not saying you should do illegal drugs. And obviously it's like a class, whatever, is the second worst one that they classify them by,
B.
I think. Class B. There we go. I think, don't quote me on that.
I know, it's B.
There we go. Luke knows it's B.
He knows.
Quote Luke on that. But what I'm saying is ultimately that if I had, like, you know, if I had actually decided, yes, I will use those study drugs, I probably would have been fine because, you know, I'm now being prescribed them and things are a lot easier. And I literally just didn't know.
It's a very different thing, though, because you would be bringing yourself back to a baseline by taking that, whereas other people are using them as a stimulant.
Exactly.
To when they already have a neurotypical situation going on.
Yes.
And I love that, the situation.
Neurotypical situation going on.
And I think that's the interesting thing there, right? That a lot of the sort of drugs, and that's why I said ADHD and stimulants at the start of this section, is that a lot of drugs that people with ADHD seek out are stimulants, right? And people, you know, will do them a lot, but also it can bring you to a sort of baseline of other people, not saying that, you know, if you have ADHD, go out and try some cocaine because you'll be normal on it. That's not the point at all.
Don't do that.
Don't.
But it does have a kind of similar impact. It's unregulated. It's illegal. Don't do it. But it makes sense to me why people with undiagnosed ADHD, if they're not supported and perhaps if they have had traumatic experiences in life, they would end up on the addiction path.
Yeah.
I remember... Yeah, cocaine was like the fun drug, the weekend drug. Should we get some bags in after you've had a few drinks? Didn't think anything was wrong with it. And then one day I was like, oh, I had a bit left and my room's a mess. Wonder if... Cool. So I did it, right? And I was able to clean my room.
Mm.
And that's where stuff can, like, get a little bit dark.
Yeah, and I think that's... I mean, that's a key thing there, right? A lot of people say, well, people with ADHD get addicted to things, so we shouldn't be giving them stimulant medication because they'll get addicted. And I want to nip that in the bud right now and say, I don't think there's, like, any evidence that stimulant medication increases someone's sort of chance of addiction with ADHD. In fact, it does the opposite. There's many, many studies. I've got a paper published in 2013 and one from 2015, both of which... you know, they looked at a pretty large group of people, over 26,000 men, over 12,000 women, born between 1960 and 1998. They looked at them from 2000 to, I think, 2009 or so. And they found that stimulant medication actually, like, you know, in adolescence, I think, or early sort of use of stimulant medication, prescription stimulant medication, decreased chances of substance abuse. And all generally, what you'll find across most of these studies is either prescribed stimulant medication will decrease the chance of substance abuse or not have an effect on it. So the people sort of saying that the idea that sort of stimulant medication for people with ADHD is going to increase a risk of substance abuse is not actually true. It's kind of a myth. And that's not to say that, you know, if you have stimulant medication, you're not going to get addicted to anything. No, it's just not going to increase your chances.
Yeah, I think it is. I see it a slightly different perspective because I don't take meds for the reason that I just don't trust myself.
Oh, that's totally fair.
Like, personal decision. Mm. And I'm very involved in, you know, the recovery groups. And there are, like, groups for people that have abused ADHD meds. So that's not, it's not to say it's a bad thing or you're going to get addicted, but I think it is important to mention it in the narrative. It could.
Yeah.
And it can. And just to be aware, and obviously having a doctor guiding you, making sure that you're perhaps on the slow release type, which is particularly what they use for someone with addiction history. But I think that's, yeah, it's important to mention.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like when people hear it doesn't affect or it decreases your chances. And I think that feels like saying, oh, so I'm fine. No, you had an increased chance to begin. You had like a 3 times the chance of someone else to begin with. Decreasing your chances, you're still above the baseline. Yeah, you could absolutely get addicted to stimulant medication. You could absolutely have addictions whilst on stimulant medication. But I just want to sort of put to bed the myth that stimulant medication itself increases your chances of addiction. In the general population, it doesn't, but obviously everyone is different. And you don't need to have stimulant medication, but if you...
I mean, I'd love to.
Yeah.
I had too much fun with it.
I'm sure you
in my 20s. I sometimes see like these TikToks of people that go, my first day on XYZ medication, and I watch it and they're like, my brain's quiet. I can do my to-do list. And I think, oh my God, I would love to know what that feels like. And it seems like it would be like life changing, but it's just like personal decision for me. I can't. And there's been a positive for that for me, which is I've had to find a way to get through life without it.
Yeah.
And that's probably why we run the channels, because actually there's not that much support out there for people if they can't or don't want to take stimulant meds.
And I just want to point out as well that stimulant medication isn't going to solve all your problems. I still have like many of the issues that I had before, you know, being on Ritalin. It's just like, for me personally, at this point, it's not even like I notice being on it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For me, there's no sort of rush or anything. It just feels largely the same. On and off. It's just, I'm doing more. I'm more capable. You know, and like when I started, you know, obviously during sort of titration, when they bump you up, you get that rush a little bit. And it's I totally understand.
Yeah,
I totally understand like being like, that's not for me. And yeah, because like it takes a little while for that sort of like,
it's stimulant. It lifts you up and it wakes you, and it's a nervous system stimulant. What's interesting is they are at the moment working on a non-stimulant medication, not available at the moment, but I was reading something about it last week, because with the stimulant medication, it's very much in terms of like the executive dysfunction and helping you to like do more things, but it doesn't necessarily help with the emotional dysregulation and like the RSD. So that's kind of in utero at the moment. So that could be interesting. So like for me, if that became available, that might be something I would try.
No, absolutely. They are bringing out a new one. I think there are a couple non-stimulants available already, though. But to be honest, we did a whole episode on ADHD medication, which you can go and watch now if you want more information on that. But yeah, no, there definitely is a new one coming out. So that might actually change the game a little bit. But yeah, I think what this kind of highlights is that everyone is very different, right? That, you know, your experiences with ADHD and addiction are going to be different from someone else's experiences with both of those things. And viewing it as a sort of monolith is not necessarily helpful to everyone. And yeah, so if we talk about the sort of science of ADHD and addiction, right, the science there is not super broad, right? Like what I've got here is kind of what I've said already, which is, you know, that these medications don't inherently lead to addiction. They can in some people, but broadly, it's the idea that they increase the risk. That's not true for the majority of people. And when it comes to the link between ADHD and addiction, we don't have enough sort of research there. But the research we do have, we can kind of build this image that we've built throughout this sort of episode of, you know, there's so many different factors that can lead to substance use disorders. And ADHD kind of ties in with a lot of those factors. You know, having ADHD is going to be traumatic for you most likely, right? Having ADHD means that you're probably going to be more impulsive. So you're going to get yourself into situations that aren't necessarily conducive to avoiding, substances or other sort of addictive behaviors.
Or risk as well.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. So like all of these sort of things come together. And so it's not necessarily just a sort of neurobiological thing. It's not just a brain difference thing. It is much more holistic than that. It's environmental, it's social, all of these things. Even if we talk about RSD, which, you know, we've done an episode on recently, like that can lead you to probably getting addicted to things as well, because you want to avoid the feelings that you're feeling, right? Like, there are so many different avenues to this. And I think viewing it as just one thing, which we tend to like to do as humans, we like to put things in very neat little boxes and say, this is this thing. There's actually loads of different routes to addiction when it comes to ADHD and outside of ADHD as well.
I think as well, there's something really interesting you said earlier, Rox, which was like, again, not promoting the use of illegal drugs, but you were saying that like taking an illegal drug helped you like tidy your room, right? And the thing is, if we sort of, as we do as a society, legally, morally conceptualize of like, taking something which changes you from your natural state, the sort of hypothesized neurotypical state, is like in some way immoral, and you should go to prison for it, right? right. That's how we sort of treat
Absolutely,
it. It's like,
yeah.
Oh well, you're committing a moral error by taking this substance. If somebody's already deviated from that perceived norm just naturally, and what they're doing is they're taking something that you've classed as illegal, and it puts them closer to the perceived norm, that should be treated legally differently than somebody who is neurotypical in a normal circumstance taking that thing and deviating from that perceived norm. Does that make sense? Because if what you're doing is you're going, oh, I'm taking this thing because it gets me closer to how everybody else is operating and how the entire world is structured, and then you put someone in prison for that when it's not their fault, and there were loads of people in their childhood, their school, who could have spotted they had a thing going on and they were undiagnosed and unmedicated. That's not really fair.
Right. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Counterpoint.
Oh, yeah.
What would you do about prison labor, huh? Where would we get all the people working for nothing?
Yeah,
huh?
But they don't
admit
that.
Well, not nothing.
That,
they do get
Corey.
Paid.
They don't admit that. They pretend that that's not why they want the prisoners.
Well, I'm sorry, Luke, but if you can come up with a better... No, but like, yeah, like ultimately, yeah, it doesn't make sense and it's not fair. And it sucks. Bye. No. but yeah, no, if anyone has anything else to add, that's it on the science, you know. I don't have much there because there is a lot of research, but it kind of comes to the conclusions that we've all kind of been talking about.
Definitely
just through experience.
Definitely need more if anyone's studying for a PhD.
Oh, yeah.
ADHD and addiction would be a good place to start.
And I think we said this in an episode recently, that I think we need more people with ADHD studying ADHD because you understand that experience and will ask different questions than people who don't have ADHD, you know, because people from the outside tend to look in and be like, well, how does this affect me as someone on the outside? You're annoying. So we do a study on why people with ADHD are so damn annoying. Oh, God. And that's literally, like, I'm not even joking. That's
100%. This is something that I'm super passionate about. And Rich and I talk about a lot, which is actually so much of the advice and even so much of the medical model comes from the presumption that all we need to do is turn ADHD people more neurotypical to assimilate them, and then everything's going to be okay, because that's what they want, because they see those behaviors that, well, that's lazier, that's wrong. Whereas actually there's some rather amazing things that can come from having a neurodivergent brain, and when you're supported, you get to kind of see the fruits of that. So if you ask someone, you know, what's the worst symptom of ADHD, they'll very often say losing things or not being able to make my bed or personal hygiene, cleanliness, the to-do list. It's these very like tangible things. But actually, for me, those weren't the worst things. The worst things was the self-hatred and the constant feeling of brokenness that I've walked under my whole life. And when you actually deal with the low self-esteem and you deal with the trauma and you begin to just accept yourself, like all that stuff is like a little bit more okay. Like you just get to be okay. I'm never going to be neurotypical no matter what I do. Stop trying and like start doubling down on the things that you're actually perhaps more gifted at that has been missed because you've been so focused on trying to assimilate over here, life can change in some rather amazing ways.
No, I 100% agree. Thank you so much for that. Like, if I can give an example from my life, like, honestly, I find that this podcast is literally just me doing that. Like, you and I, Luke, we would sit and have conversations for hours on end about this exact stuff. And then we were like, why don't we just make like a job out of it? Why don't we do that?
Filming our conversations.
Hey!
Making a podcast.
And now you're top 50.
Hey!
We're
exactly.
Aiming for the top 100. Come on, guys.
Hey, look. As two men are wont to do, we make a podcast. It's how we connect emotionally, you know? There's no other way of doing it. I don't know how. But no, seriously, like, and even when it comes to like making videos and stuff. So I'm like, if something takes my fancy, if I'm caught in a hyper focus, I'm like, okay, well, I'll just have to do that now. Whatever. Hello, manager. No, sorry. I'm not doing all the stuff I said I would do. I'm moving that around because I'm too busy doing something else that I don't need to do right now.
So if you like this podcast, you should be glad that nobody spotted Corey's ADHD.
There you go. But also within that is like a beautiful place to see this word addiction. It has so much negative connotations, right? But for so many of us, our hyperfocuses kind of are like addictions. We need them to regulate, to feel great. That's our kind of life purpose. And actually, like, you committing to that, changing schedules, I can't do this, I'm not going to tidy my room, I'm doing these videos, it is almost an addictive behavior.
Oh, yeah.
But it's one that's been applied with support, with positivity, that doesn't have kind of the negative connotations of drug use. So actually, in a way, like, we all just need to get a bit addicted, but to the good things, to the things that don't ruin our lives.
Well, that's fantastic. And on that note, I think that's us. But there's just one last thing to do. It's the Quickfire Quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. ADHD Addiction Edition.
So the rules for the Quickfire Quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finished asking the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
Some new, as yet unreleased, non-stimulant ADHD medication.
I hope it's on prescription. And what's your buzzer, Luke?
Ooh.
And what's your buzzer, Rox? Fantastic.
That was so enthusiastic. I love it.
Fantastic. And my question for you is, what percentage of the world population has ADHD?
Wah, wah.
Rox, I think you got there first. Just got it.
Well, you gave a US number and then you gave a global number. And the global number was less. So is it the global number or is it the US number?
It's whatever number, to be honest. I don't remember it. You can make one up.
Because it was like up to 10% in the US and then you said globally
ding, ding, ding.
It was 8%.
You got it correct. Okay. We're not very rigorous on this podcast.
You win some as yet unreleased non-stimulant ADHD medication.
Thanks, guys.
Probably not FDA regulated
Rox,
yet.
I've always Rox is sober, wanted. Dude. That's not cool.
Well, you don't
cool,
have
man.
To take it. You
no.
can put it on your mantelpiece.
Well, you've ended this on such a sour note, Luke.
You've ruined everything.
I'm sorry. Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Denito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cuffold everywhere.
You can follow me everywhere at ADHD_love.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.